You got to have competitive character that you can still be for the team, even when the individual piece isn't going the way that you expect it to.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Chris Richardson, the head coach at Wheeling University. Coach Richardson has worked his way through the profession with stops including an internship with the Memphis Grizzlies to coaching roles at Arkansas Tech, the University of Charleston, Fairmont State, Delta State, and the University of Central Missouri before his reign of taking over at Wheeling University. In this episode, we discuss how young coaches can find their voice and purpose while working on experienced staffs, what the very first responsibilities were once he accepted the head coaching role at Wheeling, and some key habits every young coach should build early to set themselves up for long-term success in the profession. Please welcome to the podcast, Chris Richardson. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Coaches and everyone, thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. You have your hosts, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, today. Hope everyone's season is either wrapping up or going well so far, because I know we are now at the end of February, and this is where things start to get nitty gritty. But that being said, we are alongside the head coach, Wheeling University, ladies and gentlemen, Coach Chris Richardson. Coach Richardson, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. Great to be here and be on this side of it. I've listened to so many of them. Nice to be here with you guys today.
Nice for us to know we got one listener. So this is great for us, man. We appreciate it.
You get at least two more out of this because both of my parents will listen.
Oh, good. That's good. Yeah. We'll slide them a few bucks to keep listening if we have to, whatever it takes.
We appreciate you, one, for taking the time out of your busy week, busy schedule, everything, just to be able to chop it up with us and talk some hoops. Everybody loves to do that a little bit. But one thing that we always like to do is we always like to highlight the early stages of coaches' careers and then ultimately go up to where they are now and what they have learned in the process. Everyone has to start somewhere. And one thing, and I had a coach tell me this recently, and he's, yeah, my path isn't the most linear. So I was like, I don't think anybody is. But that being said, going back to where it started for you, I know you had an internship with the Memphis Grizzlies. I know you had some early positions early on, but some GA positions, some intern. How did those experiences as an intern with the Grizzlies and as a graduate assistant really shape the coach that you would ultimately or are now would become?
I think even before that, as I told you guys off air, my job in college, I didn't play. I wasn't a manager, but I worked for a scout.com affiliate covering recruiting in college basketball and Big East basketball and specifically West Virginia University basketball. And being around that, being around those teams that Coach Beilein had at West Virginia, this would have been the mid-2000s, and then Coach Huggins his first year or so. But just it really struck me how much I missed being part of a team, a basketball team specifically, and how much I really wanted to follow that path. And so one of the people I met during that time was Chris Wallace, who was the GM of the Boston Celtics at the time, and ended up going and taking over the Grizzlies when Jerry West retired. And that's how I got the internship. Did a lot with their media relations, did a lot with their front office, just a utility man, switch five ways type of guy. And from an intern standpoint, which basically any intern is. What I really learned there, and I didn't fully appreciate until I got here to Wheeling, but when I got down there, it was right after they had traded Pau Gasol. And a couple months later, the Lakers are in the finals and Pau Gasol is right in the middle of it. And so that's bringing back, they're relitigating the trade through the media. Every pregame show, every podcast, which there weren't near as many those days, but everybody was relitigating the trade. And so I asked Chris, I said, what do you take from all this? And he's, I don't care what anybody says. I said, I know that, but how do you still know it's the right thing? I'm not saying I don't, but he said, our gratification from the trade comes down the line. He said it's a delayed gratification deal for the Grizzlies. But for Powell, it helps him immediately. He gets to go compete for a ring. For us, we won't know the full impact of it for years to come. And if you look at the Grizzlies and what happened in the years to come, they got the draft rights to Marc Gasol, who ended up being a really good player, defensive player of the year, probably be in the Hall of Fame, but had his best years in Memphis. They reshuffled their salary cap. They're able to get Zach Randolph. They're able to get Tony Allen. And then they had a young core of Mike Conley and Rudy Gay. And so they end up going to the playoffs, I think, seven straight years, made it to the Western Conference Finals. And that's a franchise that had never won a playoff game. They'd been there, but they never won a playoff game. And they trade their best player, and they went backwards to move forwards. And so the vision that he had and the belief and the conviction, taking that risk, that really hit me at the time, but especially when I became a head coach here at Wheeling and we had to begin to build. So that was something that our first couple of years were winning six games or 10 games or things are really lean. You're just trying to compete to get into the conference tournament. I kept thinking about that big picture vision. And the way we've done it here is with high school kids, almost exclusively with the right transfer sprinkled in here and there. And that big picture vision and believing in what you're doing and then having the courage, let's take the risk to do it that way when everybody else thinks, yeah, maybe not. That's what stuck out to me. And then being a GA at the D2 level, anyone that's listening to this that's thinking about getting into coaching at the small college level, GAs can do a lot. They can recruit. They can be on the floor scouting. When my daughter was born, my GAs had to run practice for a couple of days because she was born right in the middle of the season a couple of years ago. That's a great way to get in and get hands-on experience and hands-on failure and hands-on success. And then also start to develop those relationships that are so critical to upward movement in the game as a coach. So many of those experiences, even though they were a long time ago, they stick with you every day, and there's something that you take from it daily that you learn during those times.
Yeah, for sure, man. Thank you for mentioning that for young coaches, because anytime young coaches can hear great advice, that's awesome. Learn how to grind. Ironically, that was the name of the Memphis Grizzlies identity, Grind City.
Grind, yeah.
That's where that started. And so the grit and grind mentality. And what's great about that is, and this is for coaches of any level, how important it is for your team and your program to have an identity and something that you're convicted about. And that it may shift at times based on maybe you might have a epiphany and you want to go from playing a slow tempo to getting up and down. That's fine. But then whatever you decide, your belief, once you step into practice those first days and you're trying to lay foundations for things, your conviction and what you want that identity to be speaks volumes, because your players are going to feel that. Yep. And you're obviously living proof of that right now from building right there at Wheeling. Even you have to have belief in it before it happens. And that's kind of part of what that vision and identity is. Obviously, that's what they call faith. But that's what you're trying to do, is you're trying to get guys to be things and do things before it occurs, knowing that, hey, we have to play the long game here a little bit, but it's going to be worth it on the back nine as we head to the 18th hole.
100%. You got to make par. I guess that's what they say in golf. I gave that up a long time ago. But it is the belief. It's a great exercise in faith, as you said, but also it makes you better as a leader when you're going through those lean times and you have to be the one that sets the tone. And that's one thing. Coach Beilein, who played here, and I knew him in college, and I've stayed in touch with him through coaching, and then we've gotten even closer since I've been here at his alma mater. But he talks about that all the time, how the team takes on the tone from the top. And in as many years as he's coached, as many levels as he's coached, as much success as he's had, that's the number one thing that always remains true. That's the steadfast truth in coaching, is that the team is going to take on the tone from the top. And so when things are going great, when things are going bad, and everywhere in between, your energy as the coach is going to really impact the energy around you. And that's a very awesome responsibility to have, but also a very delicate responsibility to have, because you have to constantly challenge your own thoughts, not in what you believe in, but in how you talk to yourself, reassuring yourself that you're on the right path.
No doubt.
No, I love that too. And it makes me think of, and I sometimes, like, everybody will have the one thing that'll just stick with me. And Mage, you probably remember this. Konzo Martin told us, he's the head coach over Mississippi State right now. He told us at one time on one of these.
Missouri State.
Yeah, Missouri State. Not Mississippi. Missouri State.
Yeah.
And he started telling me, or he started telling us, like, yeah, one morning he was like barely getting out of bed and his wife had to push him. And he's, do you want your guys to really act this way? They were seeing you right now. Do you want them to act this way? And then that has stuck in my head the longest time. And that exactly exemplifies what you're saying, is if you start to like slack if things are going bad, or if you take your
foot off the gas. Like, those guys are going to notice that. And you just got to, yeah, you got to put your head down and keep working no matter what. That's some great advice.
Sure is.
That's especially one of those things like, now let me ask this, okay? So finding your voice, you obviously now being a head coach have been at Wheeling and obviously have numerous stops also. You were able to find your voice, but like those years as a GA, I actually had a young coach ask me this recently, and the best advice I was giving was stuff that I have learned from here, and it was really just listen. You don't always have to give something. You just listen as a young coach. But how do you find your voice? That's the one thing I feel like we get a ton of questions for is just, I'm a young coach. You're with these seasons and these veterans that they know what they're talking about. You want to feel like you're adding some value, but you just don't know how. Like, how as a young coach do you find your voice early on?
I think the way you find your voice is really through your actions, because if you don't have actions behind your voice or your opinions or anything else, then it's not going to carry any weight. Maybe it is going to carry weight. It's just if your actions don't match your voice, it's going to carry bad weight. Like, they're just going to tune you out. I was lucky early. Now, as an intern in Memphis, there was no voice. I was a
right.
Two nights before the draft, they're all at Mr. Wallace's house and they're eating Ruth's Chris, and I got a steak out of the deal because I lived upstairs in kind of an apartment that was over top of the garage at his house. But I was waiting. I just sat there and listened, and it was great. But yeah, in those early years, I think the way you find your voice is through your actions and specifically through service. And we all get into this for service. And coaching is teaching, but it's also service. And one of the first years I was coaching, I told a guy, I said, hey, if you need someone, like, I had no voice. They didn't even know that I was the guy that did their laundry. That's how far down the totem pole I was. But I just told the guys, hey, if you need anything, like, here's my number, hit me up, and they'll be happy to come in and rebound for you, whatever. So it's 2 a.m, and I'm living 20 minutes from the gym, and I get a text, hey, can you come rebound for me? I thought it was a joke. He was the best player on the team, and he had a key to the gym. So I get in there, and he's making hundreds of shots at 2:30 in the morning. And still talk to him to this day, but that's what I always think of with him was he was willing to put in the work and he needed someone to come rebound for him. That was the beginning of kind of our relationship. And then, you know, Doc Rivers said it best for players when you come to the bench, eyes and ears open, mouth shut. It's the same thing as a young coach. It's like the Matt Foley character on SNL. You think you're going to go out and grab the world by the tail and pull it down and put it in your pocket. And it's not going to happen. It's a steady rise. It's a long journey. And finding your voice, again, it goes back to what you do. And it really comes down to the relationships you have. And that goes back to service as well. If they don't know that you have their back as a player, or that you're gonna listen to them, you're gonna hear them out, they can tell you things that you're not necessarily gonna repeat, that they don't have that trust in you, then you're not gonna have a voice with them. And so if you take that to a broader context with the team, if you can be a guy that they trust, that they rely on, whether that's doing their laundry, rebounding for them when they're getting up shots before and after practice, making sure they've got their food orders in before you hit the road, just little things, making sure that you double checked if they need any people on the pass list. All those little things develop trust. And when you're in a role on a coaching staff that maybe isn't a big role from an X and O standpoint or recruiting or whatever, you can still develop your coaching skills through service and through building trust with your players. Because whether you're a graduate assistant, a volunteer assistant, or a head coach, ultimately it comes down to, do your players trust you? And what is your relationship with your players? And the stronger that becomes, the more that, you know, you can get done on the court as well.
Yeah, man. Solid gold, man. That's so good. Yeah. Especially, it's funny how you started with, we were talking about this with someone the other day on the pod about just player development, how being in the gym with guys is a great way to do that, because if you're rebounding for different guys, obviously you get to know their game, but ultimately you get to know them.
Yep.
All right. And obviously you give them basketball till they want more, but eventually more comes out, whether it's that 10 minutes after the workout's done. And sometimes it's 10 minutes, hey, see you later. Or sometimes it's 35, 40 minutes later, and you're talking about somebody's grandma that's having a health issue or something. That's where you can build that trust. And obviously, how do you spell love? I don't know. There's a great college coach. I don't know if it was either Urban Meyer or Nick Saban. One of them used to say it, but how do you spell love? T-I-M-E.
Yep.
and that time spent. And then when it comes time for practice, and you do need to interject something, whether it's in front of the whole team or when guys just step off to the side, those are those moments. Again, if those investments can pay off now with that time spent. Mm. And so you step into practice and you say something, but you've been spending time with the entire group. So now that group is going to honor your voice a little bit because you put that time in. But it does take time. It's not a quick fix.
Yeah. And I think one mistake I made early, especially as a head coach, was I've always been very intentional about that relationship piece. But the next piece of that relationship on the court is you can love them and have a great relationship with them. If you don't have the accountability for them, if you don't hold them accountable, then that's going to erode some of that relationship and some of that trust. And that's the hard piece for you as a coach. And I heard Billy Donovan say this once at a clinic, it's way harder for them to come back 10 years later and ask why you didn't hold them accountable and have to answer to that than it is to hold them accountable in the moment. And so that was a challenge early in my career as a head coach, because as an assistant, right, like you got a lot of say, but not a whole lot of responsibility when it comes to the accountability piece. Ultimately, that trends upward towards the head coach. And that was something early where just because you hold a kid accountable doesn't mean it hurts your relationship. In fact, it enhances it big picture wise because they know that you have their best interests at heart. And so that was uncomfortable early as a head coach. And it's something that, and admittedly, it helps when you take high school kids who are here for 2, 3, 4 years and you grow together, right? You feel like you can hold them more accountable because you've got a longer path with them. But
right.
That part early as a head coach was very challenging. And that's an area where I knew I had to grow and I have to continue to grow, but I've come a long way in a short time on that one.
Yeah. No, it's a humble statement, man.
I remember that perfectly. Now I'd still say I'm still a younger coach, but at the same point, I want to say about 3 or 4 years ago, I got out of college, went to a prep school, got back into college. And I remember my first things were like, because I never heard that before. And it was, you're trying to make a relationship with these kids on the team and you're acting like more of a friend rather than an assistant. And that was like the hard barrier, especially because I was 25 and most of them were 23, 24. So there was close age gap and it was hard to not be friends with them. So it was one of those, it was difficult to be able to divide, are we friends or are we acquaintances? And how do I hold you accountable as I'm only 2 years older than they look at you a different way? It's just, it's a tough dynamic to get into. So I think, honestly, I think you hit the nail on the head there as to how to alleviate that and show a little more trust and hold them a little more accountable as an assistant.
Yeah, it's a daily struggle for all of us, but it's critical to not just helping your team. That's first and foremost, as it helps your team, but you're also, Coach Major, you mentioned player development. That's personal development too. Player development isn't just your ball handling or shoring up weaknesses or developing jump shots. It's developing the whole person. Okay. And, you know, that's something that in this era of, what do they call it, player mobility, just because a kid might only be with you for a year, that's not an excuse to sell them short from an accountability standpoint or development. Like, we've had guys transfer. Now, most of our guys stay, but the ones that have transferred, they deserve your best just as anybody else does. While they're here, they're gonna be held to our standard, and we're going to push what their standard is. And whatever happens after that happens, but we're going to do our part as part of their journey because they're still young men that are getting ready for the real world when they're done playing basketball.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Nobody else we can pass them off to. Literally, it goes from us to the real world. You wish there was another bridge where they could maybe, all right, you finish it, but then now you're going to go here for a year. And then this real world prep is going to get you ready for whatever your next thing is. But they go right to the fire after us. Yeah, that's great. I love it, the way you said that.
No, no doubt. And then you touched on being a head coach. And I know this is your sixth year at the Wheeling. You've had a couple of years underneath your belt. I know you talked about some mistakes you made early on as a head coach, but I kind of want to dive into your time at Wheeling now as a head coach. First things first, I feel like people getting into a new head coaching position, there's a lot of factors and a lot of things that you have to juggle before you even touch the court, before you even get on the floor. But if you could recall your first year going into it, What were some of the things that you felt you had to tackle right away and that were the most pivotal? Like, you just got offered the job. What were some of those first things in line that you had to take care of?
The crazy thing is I got hired in July of 2020. So if you think back to those times, there's a lot of uncertainty in a number of areas. And, you know, you kind of, it's a little bit late to recruit the team. We signed a few guys the first couple of weeks of August, but I think it was July 20th, the day I got hired, and school started sometime August 14th, 15th, around there. So you had about 4 weeks to move and get acclimated and all those sorts of things. And so it was, you don't really know where to begin. I remember talking to my old boss the day of the press conference, and one of my buddies said, just do one thing at a time. He goes, that's a nice thought. He said, but that's not reality. You're gonna have different things on your plate at any one time. And then I always make a daily list of things to do and write it down. I can't do it on my phone. I still have to write it down and check it off, whether it's on a whiteboard or a piece of paper, and go through day by day. But you write all those down, and the reality is you probably don't get to most of them because other things come up. And so just the speed, right? Like, you hear about players adjusting to the speed of the game. The speed of the game as a head coach is warp speed compared to what you're with as an assistant coach. And I have the team that had been here basically and had to get to know them over the phone because nobody's here. And then when they get back, we start workouts, but we don't really know when we're going to play. Ended up being, we started playing in January, and then we got put in quarantine for 3 weeks. We had an outbreak with our team. Everybody got it once, which was good. We got to get all 16 of our games in. Eventually, they just mostly were in February. That first year was wild. But one thing I did learn is that was the beginning. And I know the word culture is used a lot, but that was the beginning of laying the groundwork for the environment that we wanted, the expectations we had, specifically from a service standpoint, an academic standpoint, a campus and community presence standpoint. Those are the things that you're going to do when you come here and you're going to play basketball. And we had guys that were getting by academically, but were capable of so much more. And I remember one of our best players, and he was just here for our game the other day, and we were laughing about this. Still the only player I've had to go in a dorm and knock on a door to get to go to class. And it happened one time. Probably why it is the only one, because those stories get passed down. But walked in the dorm and beat on his door, and a couple football players hopped out. And they're like, oh, no, it's cool. It's basketball. It's not us. And I said, okay. Got him to class and got him graduated and got all those guys graduated. And just the expectation that you were going to go to class, you were going to participate, you were going to get your degree. I was the fourth coach in 4 years when I got here. So there was a lot to take in, and you've got all these plans and you've got your strategic plan for the next 5 years. And kind of like that to-do list, a lot of that gets pushed to the side once you get your feet on the ground. So those guys did the best they could to play how we tried to play, and we adapted how we played to them a little bit. And I still keep in touch with most of them. But it was a hard year in terms of trying to get structure and routine, because there wasn't any with the way the world was, and still getting through the pandemic and all that. What I learned that year, most of all, was probably being an assistant coach is a nice way to learn some things, but it doesn't prepare you for being a head coach. If anything, I think being a head coach prepares you for being a better assistant when you go that route again, because just the loneliness and the struggle that the head coach goes through on a daily basis that most people never see. The other thing that stands out about that first year is we had a kid, and he's guarding the ball really well one day in practice, and everybody's clapping their hands, one of those defensive drills that gets everybody's energy going. I stopped and I said, hey, man, if you do that, you'll play. If you guard the ball like that, you'll play. We get to the year, and he didn't play much. And he said, I always kept guarding the ball, and you told me I'd play. And I said, well, yeah, there's some other things that go into it too. Like, you have to be able to execute offensively and not just call your own number every time. You have to take good shots. You have to be a good teammate. You have to be on time. Ultimately, playing time comes down to trust. And there's other areas where you need to develop more trust if you want to play more. And he goes, but you told me if I guard the ball, I'd play. And what I realized, and I heard a football coach say this once, is when you're an assistant coach and you have conversations with the guys and you build those relationships, it's important to them to have somebody that's there for them and lean on. When you're a head coach, your words to them are probably the most important words they're going to hear that day. And you have to be respectful of their time and their courage to come in and ask you something that's difficult. And then you have to be responsible with what you tell them. You can't say something that you're not willing to back up. You can't, you just got to be very careful and cautious with your words. And I learned that the hard way through that situation. And I told him that when he graduated the next year, I said, hey, I know we didn't always see eye to eye, but you helped me as a head coach understand the power of my words and how those align, have to align with your actions. And so that was a learning experience. And then the other thing, and Coach Major, you can probably attest to this, is we lost a game and I'm talking to the other coach. Did you guys have Dwayne Osborne on recently from Youngstown?
Yeah. So
Dwayne was in our league at Charleston. And he's a really good friend of mine. And we lost a close game, is actually to them. And the next day I talked to him on the phone and I said, tell me if I'm crazy. I said, when we lose, I feel like it's all my fault. And when we win, I feel like it's in spite of me. And he's, it's an insane feeling, isn't it? I said, you get that too? He goes, all the time. He's welcome to being a head coach. That's what it is.
That's so, exactly.
So yeah. Like winning becomes relief, temporarily relief. But then once you watch the game, you're like, what was I doing? Like, I was dumb. What am I doing? Why are we in that? Right. How can I not see this? And so those are the things you learn as a head coach. And that's why I go back to how you talk to yourself is so critical, because it's going to bleed over to that confidence that you have in yourself. And ultimately that bleeds over to the confidence in your team. And so those lessons are ones I think that can only be, I hope I'm sharing them here and somebody takes them. Man. They can only be learned through actually doing them. And those are a couple that I learned the hard way my first year or two here.
Man, yeah, you might be the first guest we've had on that got hired during COVID. Because we had a different people that become head coaches at various times, and some guys were long timers, some guys are young head coaches, first time. I can't think or recall of anybody that became a head coach during COVID, but what a gift in a garbage bag, right? Honestly, because the one thing you have to, and you've learned this already, Doug's going to figure it out when he becomes a head coach at some point. One of the greatest things you can have is the ability to adapt and adapt on the fly. Because obviously games call for that. Sometimes practice calls for that. Sometimes the flow of a given week calls for that.
Yep.
Sometimes travel calls for that, right? So your ability to adapt and still be unflappable and not be emotional about any things that you have to adapt to. And then what a great test of being just thrown right into something like COVID, because again, you had to adapt literally every single day. If somebody got infected or whatever the case may be. So you literally, I call it that, you literally had a gift in the garbage bag, because there'll never be another time like that in our history. There'll be other things that go down, but that's one of one probably in our history in terms of going through it. And you're becoming a head. It'd have been enough just to be a head coach in normal times and going through the adjustment. Then you get thrown into that as well.
Yeah, and there had been instability within the program. The school had been through some challenges. And so there was a lot going on. And I talked to, at the end of that year, so Ben McCollum was at Northwest Missouri when I was at Central Missouri. And we got to know each other pretty well out recruiting. Like, you're from rival programs. He's not going to share a whole lot of the wisdom and the secrets, right, on the recruiting trail. But he told me at the end of that year, we talked after the season, and he's, oh, good. So you're at a place where you can make a ton of mistakes. I was like, he goes, no, think about it. Like, fourth coach in 4 years, like, you're trying to develop a culture. You got a pandemic. You played a season in a month, essentially. He's like, make all the mistakes you can. He goes,
right.
Not that nobody's paying attention. You get to learn without any of that pressure that you get once you move up in the world and all that. He was right. And the best thing about being here is they've allowed me to be myself. They've allowed me to work through those mistakes, and they've allowed us to build the program the way that we want to build it. And I can't say enough about our AD, Carrie Hanna, and her support, and then our president, Diana Vargo, and just how I think you need a program wherever you're at that fits the mission of your university. Otherwise, there's going to be natural friction and tension. And so we've tried to build a program here that reflects those values, but they're also the types of values that I wanted in a place. If I was going to become a head coach, I wanted a place that really fit me. And so we're lucky here that fits. Going back into COVID, that was a lot. And I remember someone calling and telling me after we started 0-4 and then spent 3 weeks in quarantine, I got sick and I had bilateral pneumonia. So I checked all my voicemail after 10 days, and one of them said, just remember, you're trying to build a program at the toughest time to coach one, take one over, build one at the that's ever happened in the history of our game. Just keep working. And in the middle of all that, you didn't really believe that. But looking back, I think it built the resolve that we've been able to have as a program. And it was the very beginnings of the environment that we created. Even in those difficult circumstances, you could look back now, you can see some of the building blocks.
No doubt. Well
said. I love that. I want to make sure to highlight too. I know you said it like a couple minutes ago, but two things that really stood out to me the most too is owning your mistakes. So many times going through the recruiting process and now being on the other side and recruiting high school kids, I've heard and I've physically seen, I've been in the office of coaches that I've worked with in prior years, or I should say years and years ago, but a coach would recruit a kid and say, look, you're going to come in, you're going to play right away. I completely don't stand by that. And unless this kid is like the next greatest thing that's going to come in. But even at that point, I think telling a kid like, hey, you're going to come in and play right away, basically gives them like, you're good enough. You don't necessarily need to work hard over the summer, which no, I don't think a lot of kids are going to take it that way. But where I'm going with this is like promising something. And if you can't stand by those, especially nowadays, you promise a point guard, hey, you're going to come in, you're going to come play for us right away. Then you go in the portal and find another point guard that's better than him, and you didn't anticipate that. Well, guess what? You have to own your word to this kid, and if not, he's going to come in and bring a complete dumpster fire into the locker room because you promised him something. So going back to what you said is owning your mistakes, and your words are big, and you have to choose them wisely. That is, I think, two of the most underrated things, because those are huge. If you promise a kid something and you can't stand by those words, that locker room could be, depending on the kid, could be an absolute dumpster fire after. And I think those are, what you just said is huge.
Yeah, and honestly, and we talked to our team about this, we're very upfront about this. The guys that don't play can hurt your team a lot of times more than the guys who do play.
Oh, man.
No doubt.
And you got to have, Coach Boone used to talk about this all the time. I think it was a Dick Bennett quote. You got to have guys you can lose with before you can win. And what I mean by that is you got to have guys that when things are going really bad are still in your corner, are still going to work, are still committed to the greater purpose. And that's really hard in today's world where you can just cut and run, where you can cherry pick your highlights and put them on Instagram or any other platform and basically say, coach should be playing me. Look at this from practice. So you've got to have high character kids. And that's the biggest thing we dive into with recruiting. There's got to be a skill that gets you on the court at some point. We know that. There's got to be a baseline of talent. But our biggest non-negotiable is character, because we need guys that when things – and I always ask this question on a visit. If you don't play a single minute, how are you going to handle that? Mm-hmm. Like, how is that going to affect your energy? And then you have to be willing to make a change or make a hard decision. If you give them a chance and a second chance and then they still don't buy in, you got to be willing to part ways with them, because it impacts the other guys in the locker room. And that's a very delicate situation from a people standpoint, particularly here where we've got a very large roster. We got 25 people in our program, but here we are, we're recording this in February. We have not had one guy quit the team. That says a lot when you're only playing 9 guys. So 16 of them, like a full team, doesn't play and they're still committed to each other. That speaks to the character of our guys and also to the older guys that have been here in helping encourage those guys to stay the course. And so you got to have, I think for us, that's just it's a non-negotiable. You got to have competitive character that you can still be for the team, even when the individual piece isn't going the way that you expect it to.
Yeah, no doubt.
No question about that. No, I love that. And so what we'll do now is want to hop into our hot seat. Just to allow a couple minutes for that. Really, all it is just to give everybody an idea. The hot seat is just a couple questions, unscripted questions, just more thrown at you. See how you answer them more in real time, but nothing stressful. What we need is like the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire lights that just go down and go, and the music goes off and then sets the tone a little bit. But more, I guess my voice will be good enough to be able to set the tone. So
you can host the game show. You got a great TV voice, Doug.
No question. I appreciate that. I would love to host it. Game shows, and this is completely off topic. Game shows were that was my bread and butter. I would watch so many game shows. in between, I know it's a weird sidebar, but
not at
love
all.
Them. Absolutely love them. So just diving into the first one. If you had to name one habit you think a young coach should develop early on, I know there's a wide range of things and you necessarily have to find your niche. But if you think there's a habit that is very good for a young coach to develop early, what would that habit be?
I would say just a willingness to do whatever it takes. Whether that's in my first year of coaching at Fairmont, that's what the work study guy didn't show up. I had to film the game. Most games I kept the shot chart. Some games I had to do the laundry. So those sorts of things, just whatever it takes, no job too big, too small, right down to like modern day, we still do that. When we hop in the vans, I'm usually driving one of them. And the first year of coaching, if we were hopping in the vans, I was usually driving one of them. So just the willingness that no job's too big or too small, and make that a part of who you are throughout your coaching career, no matter what your title is.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's great. And then the final one, just throw one more, is just one thing that you valued most, whether it's a player or a staff member, just a personality trait you think is most valuable to be a part of a team.
Loyalty. Yeah, it's definitely loyalty. Loyal to your teammates, loyal to your own development as a player. So many guys, I think, doesn't go their way and they stop working. Stay loyal to the player that you want to be. And then amongst your staff, obviously loyal to each other. And I learned that lesson the second time I was at Fairmont. So it had been 11, 12. We had a coaching change right before the season started. We had an interim head coach, and I had known Jared Calhoun for years. I'd worked camps for him at West Virginia. He was on the West Virginia staff. And so everybody in town knew that he was trying to get the Fairmont State job. It was an open secret. And he would call me, and he wouldn't blow me up, but he'd check in with me to see how I was doing and all that. And he came down to a game. But every time he'd ask me who's getting the job, I would always tell him it's the interim head coach. Even though deep down, I don't think I believe that. But that's what I would always tell him. Hey, they're just going to promote him at the end of the year. That's everything I've heard. The night before his press conference, he calls me. He's like, hey, man, I got the job. Like, you're good. You're going to stay. You know, you don't have to go look for a job. And I said, I appreciate that. He goes, it's not because we're friends. I said, what do you mean? He's it's not because we're friends. He's because we're friends, I would have helped you find a job. But because you were loyal to your head coach that whole season, every time I tried to ask you, you didn't know it, but I was testing you to see if you'd be loyal to your head coach. And you were. And that's why I'm keeping you. That's why I want you on my staff. So that was an extremely important lesson for me early as a young coach. And I think it goes the same thing as being a player or a teammate. Be loyal to the player you want to be. Be loyal to your program, and most importantly, be loyal to your teammates. Always put the team first in all things.
Love it.
Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. No, that's great. And I do want to say for everybody too, one, I know Wheeling's not too far from here. I've always had a big love for Wheeling. I know this was before you were there, but I had a bunch of friends that have played through there. Justin Fritz, Matt Stewart, a bunch of guys around that era. That was more like 15, 16. Tim Goff, all those
great teams. Yeah. Yeah. Coach Nakom's teams were phenomenal. They were very difficult to play against.
Yeah. And I mean, they just following along. And I know when I was in high school, I remember even looking at Wheeling a little bit, but it was just one of those, you guys have a great thing going over there. I know you have a great program. I know you guys have a great gym, everything about it. So I'm in big love over there at Wheeling, and I'm happy to see, you know, what you have done and your time there, see the success that you guys have had and to keep it going. So I love everything going on over there, and I'm happy to see you guys are doing well.
Appreciate that. It's a special place, and we tell our guys all the time, the logo never comes off. Whether you've got a shirt on like this that says the name, or you've got just a plain black t-shirt on, when you're out and about in a community of this size or you're on campus, you're representing our program, you're representing your family, they know who you are. And so take that responsibility, you know, to heart, and they're great at that. But I'm proud to wear the logo here because of what it stands for, because of how resilient the school's been through some challenges and how we're now beginning to thrive again as an institution. It's an exciting time, not just for our basketball program, but for our school.
No doubt.
Yeah. We appreciate you being on, man. This has been great. Love your humility, number one, because that alone is great advice for young coaches. It's a great approach for young coaches, but then also just how much you've openly shared your struggle, and you're obviously success usually follows struggles, but for you to just be transparent enough to say the areas you fought to have to grow in, because that's our profession. It's not all roses and berries. There's a lot of thorns along the way, but no, great share, man. This is awesome.
Appreciate it, Coach. Appreciate you guys having me on. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, no doubt.
Of course. And best of luck throughout the rest of the season also. I don't know, once you're getting into final games. I know we're recording this early February, but this will drop more later February. So obviously at that point, it'll be more post-season NCAA tournament and into. So everybody also out there listening, good luck to all of you finishing up the seasons. I know this is the nitty-gritty part. This is the fun part. So hopefully everybody has some good stories. But that being said, we want to thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. As always, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, you coaches, keep working, keep rising. We'll see you all soon.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together. We'll